Music. It's the love of music that brings us together. The love of music that forms the bond between us. For the next hour, join us for The Love of Music, presenting those aspects of music which excite, provoke, and inspire. Our host today is David Dubow, WNCN Music Director, pianist, educator, and writer on music. Here is David Dubow for The Love of Music.
This is David Dubow, and on this program I have two people as my guest, one the son of a Telka Freund, and that is our subject today, a pianist born 1879, and 1977 she died, and we'll be discovering about an extraordinary artist, an extraordinary life. With Nicholas Milroy, we have Alan Evans, who really, in a sense, started making Mr. Milroy aware. He was always aware of his mother's heritage, but he was not necessarily doing anything about it. Well, Alan Evans is a man who does lots of things, and he's a composer, and he's very interested in performance practice, and he feels that some of the most important pianists are not being heard anymore, and he discovered Telka Freund's playing and went out of his mind, and he called on Nicholas Milroy. They've become friends, and they are now here. Alan Evans is also the man who wrote the liner notes to the Ignaz Friedman album, which is out lately, and it's a wonderful album, and he's writing a biography of Friedman. So we have a wonderful program on hand with some old recordings made by Telka Freund. Now, Nicholas Milroy, you are the son of this remarkable woman. Tell me a little of her.
Well, Telka Freund was born in Budapest, Hungary, in 1879, died in Zurich, Switzerland, only 5 years ago, at the age of 98. Mm. At a very early age, she started studying the piano, age of five. Her hands were so weak, her fingers were so weak at that time, that they had to be held. Mm. Her first teacher was a cellist of the Hungarian, of the Budapest Opera. Later on, of course, this hand became quite steely.
Yeah. A vice-like grip.
Vice-like, huh?
And even at the age of 98, when she shook hands with you, it was a vise-like grip.
Really? Now, of course, she came from a family that had already produced an important pianist in her brother, am I right?
Indeed. Telka Freund was the youngest of five children. Robert Freund was the oldest. There was actually there were 20 years of difference between the two of them. Robert Freund was a pupil, a private pupil of Liszt,
yes.
And therefore most of the listings of the Liszt pupils don't contain his name. But he was a very favorite pupil and spent much more time with Liszt than usually the people who came to the classes.
And when Robert Freund was 18, he had transcribed the Die Nachtliche Zug of Liszt for mm-hmm. piano. Mm-hmm. And Liszt was so pleased that he helped arrange the publication for it. And there's a remarkable letter written by Liszt.
Mm-hmm. Well, when was he born in relation to your mother?
He was born in 1852.
So he was quite a bit older.
Quite a bit, yes. More than 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
At age 13, he went to Leipzig, where among Moscheles, a friend of Beethoven, was one of his
so
teachers.
Robert Freund was actually the student of Moscheles, which goes back to Beethoven.
Right.
Really, it's
right.
Wonderful. What a heritage we
and
have
of
here.
Reinecke mm-hmm. and Ferdinand
Mendelssohn,
David,
the Leipzig Conservatory. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then later on, as a master class to Tausig.
Yes.
And after Tausig, he had the good fortune to be in Budapest at the time when Liszt came.
Mm-hmm.
And so he became Liszt's pupil.
So Robert Freund really gave your sister a tremendous heritage right there with that 20-year gap.
Right there. And then much later, he became very close friends of Brahms.
Mm-hmm.
So both the Brahms and the Liszt heritage went straight to mother through Robert Freund, who himself was an excellent virtuoso. He was the top virtuoso of Switzerland from 1873 to 1912,
mm-hmm.
and the premier piano teacher at the conservatory in Zurich.
Mm-hmm. Alan, tell me a little about her career in Europe and then when she came here.
Well, her career began officially in 1901 after completing studies with Busoni.
Who adored her.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He considered her one of his finest students.
Was amazed at her Brahms Paganini variation. Yes. One of the most difficult pieces in the world.
Yes, he wrote about that he could not have played that as she did at her age.
Mm. And then what?
Well, after her studies with him in Berlin and Weimar, she gave her debut with the Berlin Philharmonic with Busoni conducting, and it was a phenomenal program.
Wow.
First, the Beethoven Third Concerto was performed, then the Brahms D minor concerto, and then the Spanish Rhapsody of Liszt in Busoni's arrangement for piano and orchestra.
So three piano and orchestra works she played at her debut?
Yes, and an encore of the Liszt Rakoczy March.
Doesn't happen anymore like that, does it? That is fabulous. Were you there? Nicholas?
Probably in dreams.
Uh-huh. You were not yet born. Okay. Now,
But the career began with this event, and it was a very, very strong career. Many concerts were given in Vienna.
Was she compared with her brother, who was slightly more famous at that time? No?
They were very different in their approach to the piano. Although she learned a lot from him. He was one of her teachers.
Yes.
And when there was a question of how to play Brahms, for instance, when he said to her, I remember that, she worked on an intermezzo, and she said, Robertchen, how are you playing this?
Uh-huh.
And he said, just sing it.
Oh.
Just sing it.
Charming.
And this is very typical of the way these things have to be played instead of the heavy plodding that many of the pianists feel they must do when they perform Brahms.
Okay, I'm going to now go back to Alan and tell us now, after that big debut performance, what happened.
She had a very good career playing in the major musical cities such as Vienna and Berlin and Zurich. And then in 1910, she married.
Mm-hmm.
She married a remarkable engineer, electrical engineer, who was also an inventor and the father of Mr. Milroy.
Mm-hmm.
Who, by the way, if I may interrupt,
sure.
Was first assistant to Steinmetz in Schenectady at General Electric. Hmm. He was only 23 at the time.
Wonderful. You were yourself born in Budapest.
Yes,
yeah.
But not in 1911.
Yes.
But at this point, she preferred the family life to the life of touring all over and giving concerts in many cities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So at that point, her concertizing ceased, and she raised a family of two sons.
That's wonderful. And then what happened?
Well, if I may interrupt, well, around 1936, it became rather clear what would happen to Hungary and people who were not liked by Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And so she decided at that time, and her husband also, my father, that it is time to think of emigrating.
Mm-hmm.
So she had to take up concertizing in order to make a living.
I see.
And she worked at it, but somehow they couldn't get away until 1946. In 1946, they came to the United States, and in 1947, she had her first performance, her debut in Washington in the National
and
Gallery.
And it was sensationally reviewed.
Yes, quite extraordinary.
We're going to actually hear, because I can't wait to hear Atilka Froin play, and we're going to begin our program with the Bach Prelude and Fugue in E-flat. Am I right, Alan?
E-flat minor.
The E-flat minor. From
yes.
What book?
Book one of the Well-Tempered Clavier.
And tell me of this.
It's number seven.
Yes. Is this a recording or a from a live performance?
This is a private recording made in a home.
Wonderful. We're going to stop our discussion now and actually listen to this artist, Atilka Froin, and my guest today, Alan Evans, and Nicholas Milroy, her son, and we're going to hear the Prelude and Fugue in E-flat minor, Atilka Froin, pianist.
Thank you. Thank you.
You have heard an inspired performance of the E-flat minor prelude and fugue of Bach, the artist, the late Etelka Freund. And I have as my guest today Nicholas Milroy, her son, and Alan Evans. And we will be back after these messages for more information about a splendid artist and a great career. This is David Dubal, and we've returned. Nicholas Milroy is the son. He is a retired economist, and he is the son of Etelka Freund, the subject of our program today. She was, well, Alan, what's interesting here is, of course, this is not what we call the new scholarly kind of Bach playing. First of all, it's on the piano. Second of all, it has many romantic touches. And I know that you're concerned with making known the old performance practice of pianists such as Etelka Freund. Tell me how you came to her and what you mean by trying to save this way of playing.
How I came to her was hearing a recording she made for Remington of some Brahms pieces, the F minor sonata and two intermezzi. And it was phenomenal. The variety of touch, the interpretation, the phrasing, the sound she drew from the instrument, it was such a refined playing and such an understanding of the music that after listening to her perform a work, you had such a grasp of the work's musical structure. So it was a great curiosity, and I wanted to find out as much as possible about her. There's a great need today for this because the way the piano is played and the way it's taught has changed over the years.
But what do you mean by that statement exactly in a few words? I know it's a big statement.
Yes.
How has it changed, and how has it changed in its pedagogical world?
Well, to paraphrase a living Busoni pupil, Edward Weiss, he mentioned that if an actor performs Shakespeare, they have to interpret the role. Whereas today, most of the musicians, it's enough for them just to reproduce the text. And that's one of the characteristics of today's playing.
Yes.
Whereas in the past, there was a greater emphasis on interpretation. And it's not enough just to have the music itself, the Urtext, because most of the great composers of the 19th century were great pianists themselves, and they had very specific ways of performing their music, and this tradition was only passed on through those who studied with them and came in contact with them. And that's another reason why Etelka Freund is so special, because in her world were Brahms and through her brother Liszt and Richard Strauss and...
Nicholas... Tell me of her own reactions to this wonderful environment she had. Did she give you any stories that were of interest, or aesthetically, or just plain human interest about Brahms or Bartók, who she knew?
Well, the whole atmosphere of our home, because of mother's interest in everything and everybody, and this whole history and background of hers. And then father's interest in whatever she did, and also her interest in other forms of art. So I grew up in this, and I, differently from quite a number of young people I know today, soaked up this atmosphere into myself, and I practically live on it now in enjoying painting and literature and... different languages, and of course, music, most of all.
Now, did your mother actually know Brahms?
Oh, yes. Well, she was studying in Vienna at age 16. She studied for 1 year harmony and theory with Eusebius von Mandichevsky, who was a very close friend of Brahms.
Made editions of his music, yes.
She studied the material for 4 years within 1 year, and Manichevsky went around telling about this wunderkind to everybody else. And on Wednesdays every week, she usually came to visit Brahms, who was by that time a close friend of her brother Robert. And it was very interesting. One day a visitor came to Brahms, Brahms' home while she was there, and the visitor asked whether she was also a pianist, whether she plays the piano, and Brahms interjected yes to the enjoyment of everybody.
Oh, charming. So Brahms was nice to your mother, obviously.
Yes, yes.
Now, what did she say about Busoni? He was an awesome figure.
Well, that was a very deep friendship with Busoni and his wife that lasted as long as Busoni lived. Mm-hmm. Busoni died in 24, mm-hmm. and I met him in 23. Mother took me up there to introduce her two sons.
So you met Busoni?
I met Busoni, yes. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget that. Very lively and rather wild face and enthusiasm and quite a personality.
Yes,
I mean,
everyone
something
was
extraordinary.
Everyone was amazed by Ferruccio Busoni. Now, there is a shadowy figure in her early, from age 11 to 15, she studied with a man that we don't hear of now, but who studied with Liszt also, as her brother did, and taught, what a wonderful tradition, taught Bartok and the great Dohnányi, and that's István Thomann.
Yes.
She studied with that man. What did she say about him?
Well, she studied with him from the age 10 to 15.
He must have been some teacher because he produced so many good...
He certainly laid the groundwork, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and very good groundwork at that. But then musically, she needed more.
Oh, sure.
She needed a different kind of inspiration that her brother and Busoni could give her later on.
Alan, you want to comment?
Yes. From Busoni, she furthered her interest in Liszt more so than Thomann could have provided, because Busoni, of all the pianists of that time, really personified Liszt's idea of the musician, the virtuoso, the composer, and he had a great empathy. As a colleague and teacher of Etelka Freund, he even presented her with many first editions of Liszt's mm-hmm. music. Mm-hmm. Just so that she could be familiar with certain works of his.
Alan, what have you brought now for us to hear? I know that these are recordings when she was past 70, if not more, 75, something like that, and sometimes these were done very impromptu after lunch.
Yes. The next piece we have is the Bach chorale, Rejoice Christians, in the arrangement for piano from the organ by Busoni.
Mm-hmm. That has always been played by many people, so I'm looking forward to hearing this. Let's now listen. You have heard sounds from the past. Etelka Freund playing a chorale prelude, Rejoice Christians, by Bach Busoni. And what a splendid performance. Rhythmically, technically, it's just the exact right tempo, where even Busoni plays it too fast, Alan.
And she makes such a differentiation in the articulation. You have the chorale coming out very boldly and legato, and a somewhat light legato touch of the rapid right-hand work and mm-hmm. a non-legato bass. It's rather similar to Busoni's own interpretation.
Yes, yes. You hear everything, and that's so wonderful. And you have whetted my appetite more and more. And after these messages, you know we are going to hear two Brahms intermezzi. Stay with us, and we will be right back for more discussion on the art of Etelka Freund.
You're tuned to WNCN, Classical 104.3 FM.
Mobile Showcase Network presents Charles Dickens' The Life and Adventures of Nicholas Nickleby, hosted by Peter Ustinov.
During four consecutive evenings, you will meet 39 actors who will, between them, introduce the full range of characters of a great Dickens novel. You'll meet baronets and beggars, moneylenders and milliners, aristocrats and outcasts. And at the center of it all, you'll get to know a peculiarly English type of hero. Frightfully decent and well-meaning, painfully naive, and terrible with women. Young Nicholas is almost tortuously slow on the uptake, but when finally raised to anger, his sense of outrage at injustice can be fearful to behold.
Nicholas Nickleby begins Monday, January 10th. As theater, it was one of a kind. As television, it will be history.
Watch Nicholas Nickleby on WNEW Channel 5 and listen to the stereo simulcast on WNCN 104.3 FM, January 10th, 11th, 12th, and 13th at 8 p.m.
And now we return to David Dubal for The Love of Music.
We are back. Nicholas Milroy, a retired economist, is the son of Etelka Freund, who lived from 1879 to 1977. And like so many important artists, especially that had developed and matured around the turn of the century in that great pianistic melting pot that the world in Central Europe, in Berlin, around Busoni, heralded, we have lost some of these wonderful artists. We are trying to really resurrect this memory here, and the sound. We're going to be listening to Brahms. We have talked to Nicholas, and just the idea that this woman knew the great master, it has that almost eerie and yet wonderful feeling that there is continuity somewhere.
Indeed there is.
Yeah. Well, tell us about the Brahms playing and why this is so, why you've chosen this, Alan.
They're very good representatives of her art, sonically and interpretively. The way she builds and paces the work, the intermezzo opus 117, number 2, mm-hmm. the lyrical treatment of the themes and the long phrasing. And I'd like to mention something we didn't get to earlier, but that at the time she was visiting Brahms, he was so taken with her that he had her elected into the Viennese Akademie.
Gesellschaft der Musikfreunde, of which he was then president. He insisted that she be taken on as a full regular member, even though she was only 16 years old and a student at the time.
And by, what a compliment.
And this was she was the youngest member ever elected into this institution.
And her repertory didn't get smaller, it got bigger and bigger. She played an immense amount of music, didn't she?
Yes, and she had a fantastic memory, if I may.
I see here, Nicholas, that in Brahms alone, the Opus 1 Sonata, the Opus 2 Sonata, the Opus 5, the variations on a theme of Paganini, of Handel, of Brahms, three of the four ballades, three intermezzi, rhapsodies, capriccios, just yes, unbelievable.
And both concerti.
Now, also, she was by no means frightened of contemporary music, as so many people are today. She was playing the music written during her time, and she knew Bartok, and they had the same teacher. She has 12 pieces of Bartok that she played, and she played the Toccata of Busoni, which Brendel told me is without a doubt the most mechanically difficult work he has ever attempted. So here was a woman who played all of the 12 etudes, opus 10. And we have lost her art in a way because
it is sad.
Yeah,
it is very sad because of her age. Mm-hmm. Agents wouldn't be interested in somebody.
She wasn't a new competition winner.
The well, investment didn't seem to be protected enough.
So are these Brahms that we are going to hear on Remington?
This was from her only recording on Remington, mm-hmm. a Brahms disc. The intermezzi are Opus 117, number 2, and Opus 116, number 2.
We'll hear them now. one after another, and the artist is Atilka Freund, a name you may not know, but after hearing this playing, I think you'll remember the name, and that's really something that we're after right now, remembering a name. Atilka Freund in two Brahms intermezzi. Brahms himself sent these pieces to Clara Schumann one at a time, and he said, they're the cradle songs of my old age, and I think that the audience should never exceed just yourself. Here is Atilka Freund in Opus 117, number 2, and 116, number 2 of Brahms.
Thank you.
Alan, as you say, we have just heard something very special, something exquisite, a disappearing kind of sensibility, I believe, in a human being be able to put their heart right on the line and feel the music so excruciatingly. You know what I mean?
And this is the essence of that time.
Yeah.
Her playing reflects that age and her contact with the composer himself, and also a very great sensitivity to the nuances in the piece, and her command, her sweep of it, and the delicacy.
Yeah, that innate sense of rhythm, just wonderful.
The rhythm, especially in the last intermezzo, that Hungarian, it's almost a Hungarian type of rhythm, which reflects the influence that the Hungarian music had on Brahms through Remenyi, the violinist.
Is there any way to get this heritage back on a living record?
Well, we hope in the future to republish the recordings, and there's a great deal of material in the family archives, letters, memoirs.
Tell me of the possible book, Nicholas.
Well, there are a lot of letters from Liszt, from Brahms, Strauss, Richard Strauss, Reger, Dalbert, Grieg, to my uncle. Also from Busoni. Then there are a lot of letters from Busoni, Manifchevsky, and Bartók.
These are all unpublished letters.
Except for the Bartók letters to Mother, they're all they have not been published. Then there is a very interesting piece that my uncle wrote, Reminiscences, which he was very reluctant to write because he didn't like to talk about himself. My mother and my aunt urged him in 1915, he retired in 1912, to write down at least those reminiscences that concerned great personalities who died. So he wrote this.
So this book exists.
This is going to be, yes.
Go ahead.
This is Emmanuel. This is going to be the essential part of this book.
Well, if I know Alan Evans, he is trying his darndest to get this to happen, right?
Absolutely.
If it weren't for him, the whole thing wouldn't be considered because
Alan is a resurrector.
Yes,
he's a resurrector.
He is an archaeologist.
Yeah, and a composer, but he knows how hard it is to compose these days.
Absolutely.
Right? Okay, now, on that Remington disc that we heard, these two Brahms intermezzi, there's also the great F minor Brahms sonata, and I am just, well, I'm now dying to hear that, so you're going to have to come back for another program some other time.
With pleasure.
Wonderful. So that's the only disc she made here, right? And of course, that's out of print. But I hope everyone taped what we just had on, frankly.
Yes, so and the other, if we have time for the list.
We are going to have time.
Well, this is the first time in many years that anyone is going to hear this. These are from the list, St. Francis Legend, the Sermon to the Birds, comes from an old radio broadcast, and it's really a privilege that the family has allowed it to be made available so we could listen to it again.
Well, I thank you, Nicholas, for this.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I hope it's every listener's pleasure.
Well, we're going to hear this St. Francis preaching to the birds, which is one of Liszt's two legends, and I'm looking forward to it, and we will hear it now. Atilka Freund, the artist. What a performance. Atilka Freund, a pianist that most have never heard of, and yet you have just heard one of the great Liszt performances. Right after this message, we'll have a concluding remark from Alan Evans and Nicholas Milroy. I'm back with my guest, Alan Evans, and Nicholas Milroy, the son of Atilka Freund. We have just heard the St. Francis legend preaching to the birds. And, Alan, this is playing that, well, you've more than convinced me. When you called me, you said, you must air this artist. And I said, okay, because you were so absolutely adamant about it. You said, this is music, this is playing that we have to hear. Conclude today's program for us, really, because we have to get off the air for various reasons of time.
One or two writers wrote after her first American concert, describing her art the following: "It is a spiritual quality above and beyond the miracles of sonority and dexterity. One felt the thrill of a new experience. One reveled in the luscious mass of magnificent sound she drew from her instrument." Mm. And having gone into her life and circumstances, yes, we know why.
Yeah. Well, she lived deeply, and as Busoni said, she lived through the soul, which is the essence and the nourishment that every great artist must live through, not just outwardly. And Nicholas, as her son, you had an extraordinary childhood, and your reverence to her and love comes out in talking about the way she played the piano at all times, this love for the art, which we, it's almost a forgotten thing today. It's almost, well, we love art. It's a commonplace. But you see, that probably is the difference. They loved art, and they sacrificed a great deal to play like that.
And how could one not be affected by this when one has lived with it all one's life, and even after she's gone, I live with the memory of it.
Yes, so wonderful. I thank both of you for coming here and sharing your recordings of